Hey, you're listening to the Bluth Society. I'm Havana.
I'm Carrie.
And I'm Dee.
And we are three animation geeks here to review each of Don Bluth's signature films, which we did!
Yay!
Actually, this is a bonus episode, and if you want to listen to our reviews, you can actually listen to previous episodes. We've covered them all. But we wanted to record a bonus episode today because we just got back from MomoCon, and you guys, I cannot believe we got to do this, but Dee actually got to interview Don Bluth himself!
Yay!
And we have that interview here for you listeners right here, and I'm so excited to share this, and we will talk about it after we play the little interview she did. Let's take a listen.
All right. This is Dee with the Bluth Society, and I have a very special guest here with us today. Do you want to?
Yeah, it's me. Yeah, I'm Don here. I'm Don Bluth, right? And I'm happy to be here.
Thank
you. It's going to be a lot of fun today.
Yeah. We're at MomoCon, and is this your first con you've ever been to, or?
Well, first MomoCon I've been to.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you've been to other ones.
I've been to.
Oh, man. Opportunities missed on my part.
That's what I keep thinking. You know, I keep thinking that it's really, really a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
So anyway, it's fun. Yesterday, we had so much fun here. There were a lot of people. We got to sign some autographs for them and to talk to them. And I just love talking to the people.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I love talking to you. You're so inspirational, actually. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, the podcast, but like really, I have talked to so many people who came up. They got a signature. You are so nice and you compliment people. And then they walk away and they get 10 steps and start crying.
Oh, really? That's the part I didn't see. I'm sorry about that. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I think it's what you remember all the time, though. No, whatever you do in life, you got to remember that some of it is intentional, some of it is not. And you just got to take a good look at that and enjoy every moment that you're alive.
Yeah.
So I've decided that's the thing to do. And coming something like a MomoCon, I mean, this is wonderful to meet these people. I had no idea there were so many of them.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, really, a lot of them there. And each one of them has its own story. Okay. You know, they have something that's important to them.
Yeah.
And I like to fan the idea of having your own dreams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody has their favorite movie and what it means to them. And if I can, you know, wax myself, I love Thumbelina personally.
Really?
Yes, it means so, like that movie means so much to me. I think it was, so in Thumbelina, she, at the end, she saves herself.
Right.
And I think that was the thing that I connected with. Yeah.
That message, the key to everyone's happiness lies within yourself. But the problem is that you find the key.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they do that. There's sometimes people looking outside saying, this is really funny for me, but a lot of people say, help me, somebody help me, I don't know what to do, you know.
Yeah.
And that help is really within.
Oh, absolutely. You got to make it happen for yourself.
Yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're on your book tour.
Mm-hmm.
And how has the book tour been going?
The book tour?
The book tour.
Oh. The book tour, I think it's been really, really good because, see, I wrote this book. I never thought I would write a book.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote a book, and in it is a lot of things that I'd never really told anybody in the public.
Yeah.
I didn't tell anybody that I'm a religious person.
Yeah.
You know, and believe very much in God. And so that sort of moves everything that I do because I know that I'm a tiny speck in a really big universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you keep that in perspective, I think what happens is you begin to see things as they are, you know, and somebody created me, somebody put me here as they did everybody else. Somebody put me here to do what?
To create and to like inspire, you know?
Maybe that's it.
Doing what you're doing.
Yeah, maybe I think that's it.
Yeah.
Somehow in the whole thing, you know, you have to find out what have I got that I can give to someone else. And that's the key to happiness. What you give away, you get to keep.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of at the beginning of the book, so I don't want to give anything away about the book. I read it. It was wonderful. The beginning, you actually quote Into the Woods. They say, careful what you do, children will see. Careful what you say, children will listen. So how do you build that into your movies? Like you... So many of your movies have, all of your movies have morals. They have reasons for being and like, you know, at the end of the day, people go take away with lessons. So how do you choose what morals and how to deliver them, especially to children so that they'll understand?
I think you have to talk in the children's language. And sometimes you do it with symbols.
Ooh.
But and then later on, as they watch the movies again, as they mature and grow up and everything, they say, oh, wait a minute, that means something else. And so, you know, they discover. And life is really about discovery. You're finding out who you are, number one, and finding out who your father in heaven is, number two. We have a mother in heaven, too.
Yeah.
I believe that. And so, you know, my heavenly parents, someday I'll see them, and my earthly parents will be there, too. So I have two sets of parents. One from my body and one from my spirit.
Yeah.
And I'm just excited about, and I'm not excited about dying this year, but I'm excited about that someday, you know, I'll be able to see them, hug them, and thank them.
And everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, it is. And you have to take the good, the bad with the good, because it happens in life. A lot of things happen to us who say, why me? Why me?
Yeah.
but they're lessons of what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happens, I read something one time that says we all, individually, every once in a while, have to go through something called the furnace of affliction.
Mm.
And as you go through that furnace of affliction, it hurts. You don't feel regretted. You say, hi, how come? I hate their form of you over. I'm hurting. But what happens is at the end of this, you go, I learned something.
Yes.
And so that's why it happens. Mm. You can't learn as good in a vacuum. You know, you have to go through good and the bad.
Absolutely. So I think that's all the time we have left. Thank you so much for doing this. And of course, we love you.
Yes. Thank you. Hey, you guys, don't forget your dreams.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Ah, that was so awesome. Oh, my God. Dee, how was it actually meeting him and talking to him?
So before I was supposed to initially meet him, I was really nervous. I was like, okay, don't start crying.
And Carrie, you actually got to meet him for a signature in the autograph line, right?
I did. So I was in the autograph line for 4 hours.
Oh my God. That's why you weren't answering your phone. Yeah.
That is literally the only time I have ever gotten an autograph, ever.
Wow. Yeah.
And so and it was for him, and like
worth it.
It was worth it, but I guess the other thing is that when you're in the line standing for autographs, like I didn't realize how much of a family you become so quickly.
Really?
Like,
oh yeah, you're just waiting.
I found a person whose favorite is Troll in Central Park.
Really?
Yes.
Wild.
Mega fan.
If you're listening, Troll in Central Park mega fan, I'm sorry for how we eviscerated that movie.
Yeah, we really eviscerated that movie. I am so glad that you started watching it when you were three, and it was the perfect film for you when you were three.
You know what? There you go.
And that it really is perfect for that age group, but as like film creators and people who are like actually you know, do this sort of stuff for kind of a living.
Yeah.
We love you. It's not the worst ever.
To make you feel better, we actually got in a little mini argument because Carrie said that was the worst, and I was like, no, Pebble and the Penguin is so hard.
How interesting.
I also found somebody whose favorite was Pebble and the Penguin.
Wow. They're wrong.
Okay, here's my deal. Like, I feel like in many cases, Don Bluth gets like such a bad rap for his bad movies, but every time it's any other fucking studio, they get like a fucking free sale.
Yeah.
Because at least they're not Don Bluth. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
What?
Disney's.
Do you really feel like people say that? I'm surprised.
No, cause people say that to me all the time. They're like, oh, Don Bluth. Like, he's immediately just considered. Not like they don't even know his name. It's just like those movies
aren't that good. Those are posers.
Well, they're posers, but it's also not posers. They're uninformed. They are uninformed. But at the same time, it's like.
You would not think that because, like, at the MomoCon event, like, his autograph line was.
The longest.
I think this is Saturday.
They had to cut people off.
And
there were 800. There were 800 people still in line that they had to tell to come back the next day. He had to extend his stay, and he pushed his plane back just so those people could get autographs.
Which I think is so sweet of him.
Yes.
Like, well, that's amazing.
When you asked me what was it like first meeting him, I mean, like I said, how I felt before, but like as soon as I met him, there was like an intense calm, and like, you know, part of our conversation was about religion, and we don't share this exact same religion.
Yeah.
However, he's such a kind soul that, like, and it comes through in his book, it comes through just meeting him,
mm-hmm.
that it was effortless to talk to him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he just seemed like such a gentle, compassionate, like, friendly person, which I'm glad, because sometimes you never want to meet your heroes and then they turn out to be a douchebag.
Seriously.
But no, it's so exciting. And also, like, I'm just so impressed, Dee, that, like, you actually, like, read his whole book and, like, you did so much research.
Okay, can you remind me, did he do the audio of
the did. Book? He did the audio. Wow.
You were being read Grandpa Blue's story
for the man himself.
Oh, that would immediately just put me into sleep. I'd just be like, oh, thanks, Grandpa.
Well, surprisingly, like, the book was so interesting. It was, I mean, I sped it up like 1.5 times so that I could
get through it fast. Yeah.
Yeah. But listening to it, I was just enthralled.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's so interesting, the different things. Like, he does talk about his religion. Mm-hmm. He talks about how that plays into the movies. He talks about his time at Disney, which is something we as a podcast don't really talk that much about. Right. We talked about the defectors, but we don't talk about the good things.
Yeah, and it was like, because in many cases, like, it was so hard to find information about that point. So I'm so glad he wrote this so that we actually have a record of it.
Yeah.
Because everything, when it comes to the defectors, or even before that, it's all about how they were frustrated and how they were like, this isn't what Walt wanted. Mm-hmm. And then meanwhile, Don's going over there saying, y'all, we're like straying from the path. This isn't what Walt wanted. And I'm going to go do things based off of that. So that is so cool.
Yeah.
What, that is so cool.
What, like, stood out to you from the book, Steve?
I mean, there were several things. There was, I really liked hearing the good things about, like, working for Disney earlier. He talks about his time, like, you don't realize that he's old enough to have met Walt Disney himself.
Yeah,
he said he's 85?
Yes,
he's 85.
I was surprised to hear that. I don't know why, but...
Well, because most of his success was in the 80s and early 90s. Right. So you think, like, you think this is, like, he's probably, like, 40-something.
Right, but it was later in life.
Yeah.
Which should be such an inspiration to everyone.
Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, he talks a lot about following your dreams and, you know, making stuff happen for yourself. And, like, it doesn't have to be an immediate success. He did a lot. Like, he did start early with Disney. He was probably in his early 20s. But he was an in-betweener. Like, he... In fact, you dressed up as Pooh, and he animated Rabbit for several...
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, he didn't become... Like, he moved up and up and up and up, and it's because he had great intuition, and there was some sort of contention around there, but it wasn't really until, like, John Lasseter and Tim Burton and all those guys were working for Disney when he left.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
And that was around the time he was directing and doing big things for Disney, you know?
That's so cool.
So it took time, and it does take time sometimes.
Yeah. I think especially, like, in this day and age where we're so enthralled by, like, young, hotshot, like, successful people, 30 under 30 and all that. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's kind of refreshing to hear his story.
Yeah, and stories like that, because I, like, okay, as somebody who went to, school for animation, and, you know, you probably the same thing with you as well, with Sequential. Mm-hmm. It was Sequential, right?
Yeah, okay. Sequential and game development.
Okay, so, like, there's this whole thing where when you're in these art schools, it's sort of like you want to be the next big thing, and you want to get it as soon as possible because you're hungry. Like, I can't tell you how many times I have heard animation students saying, I want to be the next Disney.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a trope at this point, but at the same time, like, that drive is there. And, like, the idea that, like, I can't tell you how many people I have run into who were just like, yeah, I applied to Disney after, you know, all this sort of stuff happened, you know, after I graduated, and they were like, you're not good enough. And then they just stopped. And it was just because, like, they weren't ready. They just came out of college, and they were applying for jobs that they weren't ready for. Like, extremely competitive. And it's just like, this isn't to say that, you know, you can't get there, but the idea of having that much success that quickly right after graduation is such a weird fallacy that I feel like a lot of, at least a lot of the millennial generation was sold from a very early age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, I mean, even then it was a very different process. So like when he started with Disney, there was no animation school. Mm-hmm. There was just, he did an animation test. Like he did some drawings. He had no idea what he was even like. He didn't know what an in-betweener was when he went to go do this.
Wow.
And because he had some drawing skills, and back then it was a lot easier. Like they're not drawing the same way they are now, you know, or even when he left, they weren't doing like Cruella and like even then, you know, like his first movie that he ever saw from Disney was Snow White.
Yeah.
Wow. Like in theaters.
Wow.
And now you have to compete so much and so much harder.
Right.
But like you can't just give up. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, you talked about your experience in college.
Mm-hmm.
For us, for SCAD, I think there's a higher success rate of placement.
Yeah.
However, that placement doesn't look like everybody's going over to Disney or DreamWorks.
Yeah.
I probably know like 12 to 15 people who did go work for Disney or DreamWorks or Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, everybody came here to Atlanta to work for these smaller studios.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because they pay better and they have better benefits.
Sort of.
I don't know. Floyd County offering money for childcare. That's something I found out recently.
Wow, that is great.
Yeah, they will actually pay for childcare when you are at work.
That's nice.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it is amazing.
When I first moved here, it was not as great.
So moving the conversation back to Don Bluth.
Back to Don.
Yeah, share a little bit more about what you kind of learned from the book. Like, did he talk about why he left, like, in his own words?
Yes. So we've talked about this on the podcast before, but basically the tide was shifting, and this was before Roy E. Disney took back over the company.
Yeah.
And it was starting to become a sweatshop.
Mm.
It was starting to become... instead of, you know, like a culture of like you get to know your coworkers and you're really trying to like, they had like kind of a friendly competition air before where it was like, oh, I'm going to go see what Mark is doing and I'm going to go see what this person is doing. And then a little bit of like friendly jealousy and they would just do better.
Yeah.
Like they're pushing friendly each other to do better. Friendly competition. But then it turned into a bunch of people just, like, sitting, not talking to each other, like, faces down, churning out things that don't really, like, connect emotionally to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think, wasn't Pete's Dragon the last thing he...
I can't recall off the top of my head. A part of me wants to say it was actually Fox and the Hound.
It might have been.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't. It's one of those. I think one of us is right.
I think he was working on Fox and the Hound when he left. That's probably right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know in the podcast we talk a lot about how when he started his own studio and started making movies, kind of like got Disney off their ass.
And Disney was like forever trying to like destroy his business.
Yeah.
So there's in the book he talks about meeting up with one of his former co-workers and he was like, so did you guys actually, like, he didn't know, he was like, did you guys actually like ever talk about me after I left? And he was like, are you kidding? We used to have whole board meetings about you.
Oh my god
this guy's a problem.
Hilarious.
No, really, they had like strategies of how we're gonna take down Don.
Really?
Because Don was one of their best animators.
Man, what a badass.
I know.
Yeah.
What a badass.
And ironically, he never wanted to direct. He was pushed into directing at Disney.
Interesting.
So,
wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That is wild.
So, I mean, there was that. One of the things later on that I was surprised about, and I hope they don't get mad for me talking about it, but I mean, it's in the book.
Yeah.
So, and I do, guys, I want you guys to read the book. But he talks about working with Amblin, which is owned by Steven Spielberg, who, like, if anybody knows anything about me, I love Steven Spielberg.
He is Steven's the goat.
Yeah.
I am a whole stan.
Yeah.
But come to find out, after they dissolved their working relationship with Amblin, and it was amicable, but basically they wanted to do 50 Goes West. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, yeah, I don't know about that. And so they, instead of like trying to meet the demands that Don asked, because they were asking for so, I mean, they were giving so little money to produce it that like nobody was going to be able to afford bills at that point. Mm-hmm. That instead of like going to him and trying to like explain the situation, they just tried to like completely go a different direction. And then they tried to steal his animators.
What? Yeah,
really? Nefarious.
Yeah,
felonious.
So, there was a board meeting at Amblin, and one of the board of directors suggested that they just poach animators from Don Bluth Studios. What's worse is that like he considered Spielberg a friend, and Spielberg in this meeting was like, "Yeah, go for it." I think one thing that like, and I don't want people to think that Spielberg is a bad person, because even in the book Don talks about how much respect he still has for Spielberg, even though that happened. I think people forget that Spielberg has been a producer longer than he's been a director at this point. You know, that's producer mentality, is do whatever you need to do, like you don't really care about individual people. You just get it done, you know, it's business.
Makes sense.
That always reminds me of like the Richard Williams book. So in Richard Williams' book, it's called The Animator's Survival Kit. There's actually a moment where he talks about working at, I can't remember which studio it was, but he was a director on the animated
Casper Christmas special. I was like a ghost. My brain stopped there.
She said it so confidently.
A Christmas Carol. He was working on a Christmas Carol. Richard Williams was working on a Christmas Carol. It was sort of like, there was a point where
Disney's.
I don't think it was Disney's. I think it was some other company. But okay. Anyway, Richard Williams was talking to this producer, and it was basically like, one of the animation directors was like, this is an art. And the producer was like, this is a business. And then he was like, it's fucking both.
Yeah.
And it's like, one can't work without the other. And when we're at each other's throats, nothing happens. And it sounds like, basically, I love the fact that Don was attentive enough to the people that he was working with to know, like, okay, they have bills to pay. And like, I don't know, like, he sounds like a good guy to work for on that front. Because it's,
I mean,
like,
I remember during our Titan AE episode, I mean, they really hauled ass to make sure like people don't get laid off, people still had jobs on this thing.
And that just sounds like, to me, that's one of the marks of a good person, is when they are in a place of leadership and they don't necessarily think of their own skins, but it's also like
The entire team.
It's not just one person.
Something that doesn't, I mean, I'm shifting, I guess, a little, but something that doesn't, along those lines of being a good person and, like, his character, but probably shouldn't surprise anybody, is he's a huge, like, proponent of 2D animation. To the point to, like, in the panel, actually, he was like, 2D's not going anywhere, and you just gotta make it happen, and 3D, you lose the emotion. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna sit here and disagree and be silent.
Just quietly disagree. That's his big motivation with the Bluth University, right? Like, he's trying to pass on these 2D skills, which I love. Like, I hope, I would love a revival of 2D feature animation. Hopefully that comes back, but someday, some way. But in the panel, I remember I was assisting with the panel, and he was saying, like, please don't let this die. Like, I don't want people to look back on 2D animation and think, oh, remember when we used to do that?
In some ways, the way that he's kind of talking, because I know what you're talking about. I was overhearing people talking about it, and it was sort of like, it almost feels like the way that they were sort of saying he was talking about it was almost like, this is an art that if we're not careful in preserving, we will lose the ability to do. Yeah. And it's sort of like the same preservation that some people are doing for like specific, you know, lace works or other things. Mm. Like the art is starting to die out and the people who know how to do it are leaving. Yeah. Or dying and leaving this plane of existence, and like to have the to try to be pushing folks to go into 2D and to work within 2D when it's almost laughed about at this point.
Yeah,
like there was one point where I went to SIGGRAPH, and you know the opening that they have with Disney, and it's like. It's Steamboat Willie, Mickey Mouse, like sort of whistling, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That was the first time they had ever shown it. And I remember sitting there going, oh my God, it's so good to see something done in 2D. Oh. And the guys actually laughed at me. Like the people who were there laughing at me was saying, that's not 2D, that's 3D. And I was just like, what are you talking about? That's Steamboat Willie. And they're like, oh yeah, but the book's 3D. And I'm like, are you, what? I'm just like, and then
literally
like,
that gif of the guy with the question mark. Yeah,
like, what are you talking about? And it's just like, I can't tell you how concerning it is to me that the idea we might lose the ability to do 2D animation because of all that stuff. Now, granted, there's going to be a lot of people who are like, well, you know, you have to understand the physics and the properties and the 12. But I want to say it's thank you. I was like, the 12 laws of robotics. Nope, that's not it.
No, Asimov.
But yeah, the 12 principles. Thank you, Vanna. Like, you have to understand those. And they are teaching them through, you know, basic 2D drawing. But that's not always going to be the case. And so the instant they stop doing that is the instant we start losing that art as an art form. Mm-hmm. And as a tradition that really was created, I believe, in the West. And it's one of the few traditions that we have that is recognized world over, celebrated world over, but not everybody knows how to do it.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I mean, I agree. I don't want to see 2D animation go away. I think that in the context of, like, saying that 3D has no soul, I don't agree with that because there is a level of, like, artistry that it takes to create that stuff as well. However, I mean, like, I'm just thinking different. About, like...
Yeah.
You know,
you can't tell me that first 5 minutes of Up doesn't have a soul,
right?
Because like everybody in the
all
theater
of How to Train Your Dragon, like my God,
seriously.
but that being said, like there's something so nice to see the like just 2D images that like it's almost a magic, especially when you're younger. When you're a child, you're like, how do you do that? Like, how do you make things move on a 2D plane? But like with computers, there's no question. It's just like, oh, it's in the computer, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you get to read about what happened after Titan AE? Like, what was he up to after that?
So with Titan AE, it was like, because they had lost so much money that like he just kind of like went into a hole. And he was like, I'm tired.
Yeah.
And so Brian Lavallee, is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, Brian actually like approached him, and that's how they started the Don Bluth Studios Animation School.
Oh, cool.
And Brian was so excited about just all of 2D and everything he was doing and stuff that it kind of reinvigorated him. Mm-hmm. Of course, they always had Dragon's Lair in Limbo.
Yeah.
So now it's been optioned to Netflix. And,
oh, that's right.
Which is actually like, even though we all groan at Netflix, it's actually healthy for that project. Because even at the panel, he was like, I don't own anything except for Dragon's Lair. Mm-hmm. And with Netflix, he'll own, he'll keep the rights to Dragon's Lair.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wait, so he doesn't even own Space Ace?
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah, nothing.
That is wild.
I know,
isn't
that crazy? So sad.
That's so
I thought that was one of the really good things about the panel is like it kind of teaches people. It reminds me of Atlanta in that episode where Paperboy is like, who owns my masters?
Yeah.
And that applies to everybody. Like, I hope if people are listening that are inspiring artists and, you know, or you're a writer or what have you, if you create characters, if you create properties, you need to read your contracts.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who owns your masters? Who owns your characters? Who owns mm-hmm. your story?
Right.
Make sure that you do.
Exactly.
So. Yeah.
100%.
And if you don't, make sure you're being compensated very well for it.
Yeah.
Residuals, y'all.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why Spielberg is so rich, because he owned Amblin. He took everything from like what they created at Amblin,
mm-hmm.
and they have it either in a warehouse or tried to sell off the cells for money or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that's his money. Like, he owns Fievel and
mm-hmm.
you know, American Tail and stuff. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So I was just wondering, are there any movies that he looks back on and he like that resonate with him? Does he have a favorite?
Yeah, so he very plainly said Secret of Nim was his favorite movie.
Oh,
which is
firstborn.
His very So, and he did talk about, like, I had a chance to talk to him at backstage
mm-hmm.
outside of this interview.
Yeah.
And he was saying how, like, in Secret of Nim, it was a story of good versus evil, pretty, like, back to the basics of, like, you know, using the good story, that good storytelling to really draw out, like, all of the characters' motivations and mm-hmm. things like that. And light versus dark, or, you know, like that.
So he likes that classic storytelling.
He likes the classic, like, Disney original, like, you know, storytelling.
Yeah.
That's what got him into animation.
Right.
So it was interesting that Secret of Nim was his favorite. I love Secret of Nim.
Yeah. Me too.
I had no qualms.
Yeah. No notes.
No notes. All good.
That's amazing.
But it is very, like, it's interesting that the idea of using, I mean, because somebody asked about why his movies were so dark or whatever, and it's interesting that he took that idea of, like, the really darkness and, like, carried it throughout his movies, but it is with children in mind, I mean, as you heard on the interview.
Right.
So.
That's so cool. Yeah, I think one of the things that kind of surprised me from the interview you had was I knew that he was religious. I didn't know how big of a part of his life it was.
Yeah.
And it's like now looking back on his movies, like so apparent, you know, mm-hmm. the light mm-hmm. and the dark. And I thought that was really cool that he shared that.
One of the earliest things in the book is he says that he never really talked to people about his religion, but it's permeated every part of his life from storytelling mm-hmm. to character design.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's really cool.
And so, you know, it is interesting because, I mean, I already said, like, we don't share the same exact mm-hmm. religion.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and my family might come after me for this, but oh well.
We'll protect you.
I'm a hopeful agnostic, I guess. Like, I just try to do good and keep, you know.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of there being a god or gods. I don't really believe in telling anybody's religion is wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things you were, Carrie, you were kind of worried about was in the interview, he says something about the affliction, the fear of affliction.
It's not the fear of the affliction. It is the furnace, of affliction, which is talking about within Mormonism or LDS. It's basically the idea that adversity is the fires with which you prove yourself as a good person or not. So it's sort
Which, again, is very apparent in his stories.
It is.
I was going to say, like, because it feels like he didn't answer the question, but then after listening to it again, that is the answer to the question.
Right. Yeah.
Every single movie, the characters go through their trials and tribulations to come out on the other side a better person.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's like looking at Charlie and All Dogs Go to Heaven, looking at Dimitri and Anastasia. Mm-hmm. Like, it is across the board a whole thing.
Yeah. I think whether or not you're secular or religious, I mean, the thing is, you're answering the same question. Like, where are we coming from? What's the purpose of life? Why are we here?
Yeah.
And one of the things I love that he says, like, you know, just realizing you're a speck in this universe and, like, that perspective can be so powerful and empowering. And that's, I mean, even as a, I don't like to call myself Buddhist, even though I kind of follow some of those teachings more than anything else. But I mean, that's like question that all religions try to answer.
Yeah. You
know? Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, that's, I think that's what fuels my personal beliefs.
Right.
Is that, like,
yeah.
I don't believe in any religion being wrong, because most religions, when you look at them, they all kind of have a central idea.
Yeah.
A lot of them have this idea of the Trinity too, like the mm-hmm. Maiden, Mother, and Crone,
exactly.
Or the Holy Trinity, or
Father,
you know,
Son, Holy Ghost. Yeah.
In his case, Father, Mother, and Son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree that, I don't know, there's a kind of theory I have, and maybe it's not new or whatever, but I haven't mm-hmm. seen anything around it. So, but the theory I have is that you have, I feel like religion was humanity's answer to why we have morals.
Yeah.
Like with the chicken and the egg sort of thing, morals were always there to begin with. Religion mm-hmm. was how we explained it.
Oh,
and it's sort of like, or, you know, this sort of spiritual understanding. It was like that mix of answering the question, not answering, but giving a place for morals to go and why we do these things.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I feel like that's a very universal way that humanity as a species have a, like, I don't know, there's so many Christians that I personally know. I came from a very, very religious background, for any listeners out there, and it's something I had to step away from because it just wasn't that great an experience. But that's not to negate anybody else's experience. Uh-huh. It's just, like, it wasn't for me because it was warped. And like finding that line between what is morality, what is religion, and what is a cult is always like, it's almost like you have to, it's like the strings of a violin. They're all playing a very similar note, but they're just different enough that you can sort of tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, on one hand, I think one of the things that makes Don Bluth so great at his storytelling is because he understands that morality can come from multiple different places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Let's see that.
It's crazy that you said that because that answers the question.
Oh, it does?
How do you choose these morals? Like, how do you deliver the message to children about mm-hmm. the morals that you choose, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Aw. Yeah. I think it's just so cool that you finally got to talk to him. I mean, when we found out that he was coming to MomoCon, I was like, one of us has to talk to him.
Yeah.
We're
oh
with
gosh.
The Bluth Society, don't you know?
And you know, it almost didn't happen.
I know.
I know.
I have to say this. This is a good segue to tell anybody who's listening, please also follow us on Twitter because that's why it almost didn't happen.
Yeah.
He asked what his agent asked what our reach was.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I can't log into Spotify to see how many people listen.
Oh.
And he looked us up on Twitter and there were 46 people following us.
So like,
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
shit.
And you of course weren't there that day. So
yeah, you're man, the lady who has all this information is not here.
No.
I mean, this isn't to say that, you know, you failed us or whatever. No one's saying that at all.
No,
we love
what I'm saying is follow us on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter. And also share this with your friends. Like, one of the fun things that I do on road trips is I listen to podcasts on road trips. And it's wonderful, especially if you've seen the film right beforehand. So, like, watch the film the night before you leave on your road trip. And then listen to us for 2 hours.
I know, sometimes the length is a little nuts.
The length, okay, we're not as bad as Critical Role yet.
Okay, but they're playing a whole dang campaign.
They're this also voice actors.
Yeah,
so.
this is true.
Anyways, I mean, this podcast has been one of the most fun projects I've ever worked on with
same.
My friends.
Same.
So I'm glad we got to do it.
I'm glad we did too.
But yeah, any last words before we close up?
The last thing I want to leave with is just to reiterate what he said, is that keep following your dreams. The key to everyone's happiness is within themselves.
Ah, I love it. Oh, Grandpa Blue. All right. Well, we would say see you next time, but this will be the final episode of the podcast. If you haven't checked out all of our episodes, they are all available on whatever streaming platform you are on right now, and check out some of our past episodes and let us know what you think.
And follow us on Twitter, because our next podcast, when we figure it out, we will be sure to announce it there.
Yes, exactly. That is Blue Society on Twitter.
Yep.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.